All right, Matt, in this week's episode, we're going to get into the Twitter purge. We're also going to preview the week that's coming up, the weekend that was, and we're going to answer some of your questions here on Fight Night Pixel. Matt, let's get into it. And welcome to another episode of This Week in MMA. As always, one half of your co-hosting duo, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. Matt, I'm feeling festive with the sweater. We can find you on Twitter and Instagram at Matt Allen FNP. And listen, I said it from the jump. We're going to preview the week that is the weekend that was in MMA. And let me just start off by saying this. The weekend that was incredibly dull.
It was tough to watch. Yeah, I mean, Charles Oliveira looked good. But other than that, I can barely name you a fight that stood out on that card.
We will get into a full weekend recap of UCC. Sao Paulo. We're also going to, like I said, preview the week that is. I threw out a tweet out there. We're going to get that in the Twitter purge, but just see what people are feeling like for this weekend, because of course, like you can see next to us, you've got Bellator London, really, really deep card. You've also got Cage Warriors 111 among really good cards, and there's a lot of them out there. There's Combate 50, there's LFA, there's plenty of different competitions out there. So we're going to get into that, but Matt, I kind of wanted to move through some of the bigger topics here, and I know there's one that we had in the Twitter purge that I just wanted to bring to the forefront here right now. Of course, the biggest news of this week was Ben Askren's retirement. Came out on the Ariel Helwani show over on ESPN. So, you know, credit where credit's due. He's been on there 10 times, which is just crazy, crazy to think of. He's Ariel Helwani's Gary Tonin, in a sense, to us. But really, you look at it, and this is a guy that went 1-2 in the UFC.
Oh, and
but he said, I mean, he accomplished everything that he wanted to. He really went out on a sword, especially on a tough loss against Damian Maia. But how would you sum up his overall MMA career?
Well, it's kind of wild because you see, of course, it's kind of a mix of reactions anytime anyone retires. People think he was way better than he really was, and people who want to discredit his whole career just based on his last two performances. But when you look at kind of the career and just life of Ben Askren, he did everything he ever wanted to. He just didn't get a gold medal or a UFC title. And if you did everything except those two goals, I mean, you accomplished so much in your life. It's kind of insane. And he only coaches one fighter, Macy Barber. He talked about that on Ariel Helwani. He said he wasn't really interested in coaching. It just kind of her and that was it. So it'd be really interesting what he does in the future. But he lost to the best grappler in MMA history and to probably one of those underrated fighters in MMA history. So there's no real shame in the performances that he had. I mean, the Robbie Lawler fight was insane for as long as it lasted. So even though his time in the cage was limited, and we didn't really get to see prime Ben Askren in the UFC, it was so much fun the last year, because his name was in every headline almost every week. There was always something about Ben Askren, and it made for a really fun time.
I mean, he was overall one of the bigger stars that the UFC had in the last 2 years, really. I mean, you had a perfect storm as well, because you didn't have a Conor McGregor, and of course, when the rumors fly, and they dominate the headlines, but Ben Askren was able to overshadow International Fight Week this year. Yes, Jorge Masvidal put on a great performance, and I think where he said the most underrated fighter of all time, he's definitely in the forefront. No.
But when you look at his career, other than people have just jumped on the bandwagon these last three fights, like, you don't realize he had a main event 4 years ago against Benson Henderson in South Korea. Like, he's been around for a really long time, but he never really got the credit that he deserved until that Ben Askren and Darren Till.
Even with a win over Donald Cerrone, a lot of people forgot about it because he went away after some of those big fights.
So when you really look, and a lot of people like to bring up who won the trade because it was so unprecedented at the time. There was never really a trade in MMA before. And we gave them Demetrius Johnson, and then one championship gave the UFC Ben Askren. And I think it really did turn out well for both teams when you look at it. A lot of people want to say that, of course, one championship won, but those people probably haven't even watched any of Demetrius's fights.
If you look at it right now and you look from a ranking sense, I'm going to pick on the lightweight division easily. And I go on rankingmma.com. I talked about this a couple times this week. And the reason being, I like a different perspective. You know, you go by the UFC's rankings, they're all subjective. I know they're an amalgamation of a lot of different writers, but Ranking MMA is kind of fun because what they do is next to it, they show the fights that these fighters have coming up. So it's pretty easy to say, you know, I think fighter A should fight fighter B. Yeah. So I go on there and I look at the lightweight division, and in their top 10 of all the different organizations, I believe number 5 is Timofey Nastyuk and number 6 is Eddie Alvarez. So there's a little bit of bias for some of these one championship fighters, and I get it, you know, former champ and the guy who beat the former UFC champ, but still, you look at it in terms of Demetrius Johnson, and he's still always on, you know, the pound for pound list. It could be ESPN's, it could be Ranking MMA, it could be Topology. he's always going to be there in that top 10 until the skill level just ultimately diminishes. Honest,
and this might be a controversial thing to say. I thought Henry won their second fight. I thought it was a very close fight, but I don't understand all this outrage of, oh, Demetrius never really lost. Well, he did. It was a competitive fight that could have gone either way. It was really close, but it's not like Henry didn't do well and didn't deserve a W at the end of that. So you can't say that Demetrius Johnson is still pair number one, number two, or number three.
The point that I'm getting at, though, yeah, one championship has quality they fighters, and, you know, there might be a little bit of bias here, a little bit there, but still, you wouldn't have those people in the top tens in the pound for pound list if they weren't that good. But you look at Ben Askren, look at it for overall just traffic and numbers, social media numbers, video views, what have you. You go on Google Trends, you can type this in, it's public knowledge. If you type in Ben Askren and then you pick a couple of fighters above him in the UFC's official rankings, just punch them in on Google Trends and see who trends higher.
It's not even close.
It's not even close. I tried Rafael dos Anjos and I tried Leon Edwards. Not even... The way that Google Trends works, I've never been on there. Like, I get it. I'm on there all the time. The guys on Between the Links over in the Loudmouth MMA Podcast Network know that I love to bring up these numbers. But it goes out of 100. It's an amalgamation of, like I said, video views, social media traffic, Google search traffic, what have you. Ben Askren's top of the pops at 100, and it was for International Fight Week. Even though he lost, that doesn't matter. People were searching for him. You look at Dos Anjos and you look at Leon Edwards, maybe the top for them is like 22-16 out of 100. So Ben Askren totally dominating, yeah, and he went 1-2. But the thing is, he went 1-2 in the UFC against ranked opponents. Really, really tough competition.
And it was like later in his career as well. And he brought this up on Ariel Helwani.
After a long enough layoff.
Exactly. He had said that if I went into the UFC earlier, I wouldn't have got the push that I got. And I probably wouldn't have been as ready for it. So even though I was athletically in my prime, I probably wasn't ready for that. But later on in my career, even though I wasn't athletically in my prime, I got a much bigger push from the UFC. I got placed into positions I never thought I'd be in, and I got that push a little bit more. So it's kind of a double-edged sword when you ask about, oh, did he come into the UFC too late?
Well, the one thing I want to say, and you bring up a really good point here, is the fact that if Ben Askren came in his athletic prime, when he was, you know, defending the title over in Bellator, when he's fighting the Douglas Limas and the Andre Koroshkovs, mind you, early on in their career, but still, he was dominating. He was winning fights. This is a guy that came into the UFC undefeated with the 1-0 contest. If he came into the UFC at that point in
2012?
Time, you'd be lumped in with the Jake Shields and
He'd have to beat George St. Pierre for the title at that time, and that would never happen.
Exactly, but the John Fitches and the Jake Shields, it's very much a lame prey type of offense.
I don't agree, just for this fact. Him, no matter what, for 5 years, he could have 5 losses and 5 wins in the UFC. He would still always be in the headlines because personality-wise, that wouldn't change.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I want to bring into it. So his performances might have been boring. And, you know, John Fitch and Jake Shields kind of aged their way out of the UFC. I mean, yes, they've had success in the PFL or Bellator or World Series of Fighting, whatever. But they kind of aged out and their styles were boring. And not to say that they weren't great on the mic, because I actually think that they're both very entertaining and they have a high-level knowledge
compared
of the game.
To Askren, though.
As well, John Fitch, if you ever actually go on his Twitter and watch his podcast, it's pretty neat. Like, he'll answer anybody's questions.
We cannot compare the personality of John Fitch to Ben Askren mainstream.
It's, you know, if some butts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. And that's kind of how I feel about Ben Askren. If we got him earlier, whatever.
If we got him earlier, he would not have been undefeated right now, but I feel like he'd be good enough to stay ranked and good enough to keep his name in the headlines that he wouldn't kind of drown himself out through the boringness. Because let's say he did get that label as a boring fighter. And I know sort of towards the end of his one championship career, he wasn't really fighting guys who should have been in his weight class. So he's getting a lot more finishers at that point. But if you just look at his 3 UFC fights, you cannot say Ben Askren is a boring fighter. He got thrown on his head and nearly beat to a pulp by Robbie Lawler. Came back and kind of choked him out. Got knocked out in 5 seconds, and then had a fight of the night with Damian Maia, the greatest grappler of all time. You cannot, like, his run was anything but boring.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you there. And the one other thing that I thought was pretty weird was just if you looked on social media, okay, so you've got the retirement announcement. Honestly, and maybe I'm just looking at it through rose-colored glasses, I saw a lot of positivity.
And especially from his peers, too. Like, of course, it's going to be negativity from Cheeto Fingers.
Media members, but thing was, my point here, I know Ariel Helwani sent out a tweet. I know a lot of people sent out tweets and said, hey, like, you know, don't badger the guy. Don't give him a hard time for retiring, whatever. He didn't have success in the UFC. Honest to goodness, I didn't see it. I didn't see a lot of negativity.
There was a little bit of it, but that's the thing too. It's not like he retired because he wasn't good enough. He needs a hip replacement. That's just it. You can't really fight after you get that done.
In his 30s.
Which, yeah, but I mean, he's been wrestling since he was 2 years old. But just, he said that he would probably have one more fight at the minimum if he didn't need the surgery. And he kind of expected to get a hip replacement at some point in his life. He was just kind of hoping he would be able to hold off till he was like 50 or 60. But of course, it's not what's happening. So it is unfortunate, but he's one of those guys. It's not like there's not other avenues for him outside of fighting. Like when you look at a guy like, his name gets brought up a lot. Like, Diego Sanchez probably should have retired about 3 or 4 years ago. But there's not that much else he can really do other than fighting. It's no disrespect to Diego Sanchez, but he doesn't really have that colorful personality where a lot of fighters go on to, you know, they'll work, they'll be a commentator, they'll work the booth, they'll do stuff like that. He doesn't really have that. But with Ben Askren, let's say he gets the hip surgery, goes away for a year and a half, he could be your next. Could you imagine, like, Joe Rogan and Ben Askren?
And Chael Sonnen
commentate fight. Like, there's a lot of things he can do outside of fighting. It's not like he needs fighting in his life to make a living or anything. So I'm very interested to see what he does outside of the UFC.
Yeah, and I mean, that was one of the major topics of this week, and normally we save those for the Twitter purge, but it just happened to be, you know, it dominated everything. So Matt, without further ado, we will get into my favorite segment of the week. It is time for the Twitter purge.
It's time for the Twitter purge.
At something that dominated the world MMA headlines on Monday, I happened to be invited onto the Score on MMA podcast by James Lynch, fellow Canadian. And I just wanted to say thanks. It was a great time being on there. You know, you and I have hosted a lot of live shows before. Yeah. And the best part for us, we've had fight companions and just live podcasts. The best part is answering in that chat. Best part of James' podcast. I popped out the chat. We went along. We went through some of the questions. We recapped UFC Sao Paulo. So be sure to check that out from James. I was just badgered and hammered on after the fact because I forgot to bring up the Loudmouth MMA Podcast Network, so be sure to check that out. I put out a video last night to get a little bit of traction, but you can find shows like Early Stoppage and Between the Links, myself, John Franklin, Mike Heck, Keith Schillen, Davidson Baker, there's Marcel Dorf and Max Friedman that do the Loudmouth MMA Breakdown shows. You can find the recaps with Keith and John. You know, sometimes some of the other guys hop on those. Davidson as well for some of the Bellator recaps. You can find the Not Safe for Work podcast, which is an awesome show if you want to just, you know, either turn the volume up in the car or turn the volume down when you're at work or at home. But no, the guys do a great job, and I wanted to throw that out there, and I really appreciate, you know, being on the show. James really hosts, you know, a clean show. Runs tight ship.
He does.
And listen,
it's a wicked product, though.
Honest to goodness, like, growing up in Canada, the Score was huge. We used to watch the Score
every morning,
all the damn time, every morning. So it was kind of cool to be on there. So I'm going to pump my tires a little bit more. But this is kind of the way to set up this show. And if we clip this, this is going to be the clip. So I threw out a tweet yesterday, and I said, all right, it's a busy week in MMA. There's a lot of cards coming up. And we'll go through those. Because there's some cards coming up this week that maybe there's one or two fights on there that you're going to want to see. But the two bigger ones, Cage Warriors 111, you have three title fights. Bellator London, no title fights, but a lot of really good fights. Some of the fighters that you would normally see or you would have seen on like a Cage Warriors or Bama card or what have you. I threw down other, and then I threw down no MMA at all. I want to say this.
Yeah.
For the 14% that said no MMA at all, that's, you know what?
That's fine. We all need a break every now and then.
I'm glad you're watching this show and you made it this far, 10 minutes in roughly. But yeah, good. Take a break. Seriously. There's some good cards. There is. We're going to talk about them. Every now and again, you need a break.
You do.
The other explained belows, I'll go down. I like these. But Cage Warriors 111, Bellator London, we're going to preview them. They're great cards. But listen, I get it if you're saying other. Now, Huggy Bear said, G Hurricane returning to the cage this weekend. We're going to talk about that fight. Gerald Harris has a fight coming up. It is not in Bellator. He's going to be taking on Seth Baczynski. It's in one of those regional promotions, but it's a good fight. You got a couple of UFC vets going at it, especially later on in their careers. It's a good matchup.
And it kind of helps those smaller promotions get a lot more eyes on them too. So it's sort of a win-win for everyone. And Harris was calling for a fight for a really long time. So it's kind of nice that, you know, he's finally able to compete again.
Yeah. And it was good to see him too, especially when Bellator went back to Thackerville. He's an Oklahoma guy. When Justin Wren was there with Fight for the Forgotten, doing his thing. And Gerald Harris was a part of it too. So good on Bellator for letting that happen as well. Patrick Auger there saying, LFA 79, my man. I threw down, you can't see it because I can't scroll further, but I said title fight, the main event is great. Also eager for the LFA debut of Zviad Lavashvili.
There you go.
He's 11-0. He's taking on Josh Huber, who's 24-10 with 1-0 contest. And Lavashvili, I mean, what can I say? He's Georgian, but all the fights that he's had overseas, majority of them come by finish, his wins. So it's good to see him making his US debut, making his LFA debut. And I know there's a lot of articles out there about possibly with a win. Maybe it's, you know, lines him up well, the UFC shot. And you know LFA. I mean, that's a perfect place to go if you want to push yourself.
If a guy with an LFA champ goes to the UFC, you know that they're ready for the larger organization.
So, Matt, moving on to the next one. This is something that instead of Ben Askren, this is 1A, 1B. Luke Rockhold over with MMA Fighting this week. And we just tossed out the graphic and the tweet from MMA on Point. Jason, Tom, the guy's doing great work there.
How wild is it to think that about 4 years ago, Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold, like 3.5 years ago, Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold were considered two of like the pound for pound best mixed martial artists on planet Earth. And just to see like how kind of quick the decline of both guys have been, it's just insane. Just before you get into this itself.
If you look at the fight that Luke Rockhold had against Yoel Romero, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, that was when the shin issues happened.
No, he had shin issues his whole career. But in that fight, he was doing really well.
It got opened up.
Yes. But in that fight, he did really well, and then he got caught with a left hand. And Michael Bisping, he was doing pretty well, gets caught with a left hand. And then it was all those, does Luke Rockhold just have a glass chin? But when he fought David Branch in between those two, he got hit a little bit, but he did look good. Like, once he got into his positions, he looked as dominant as
you. Yeah, like, there was the point where he's up against the cage and he was just eating unanswered shots. But, and we'll talk about David Branch later on.
Exactly, Shlenko. But, and you like to bring that up with Luke Rockhold. If anything, that's a positive. It showed that he ate shots and didn't go down right away. You're going to get hit. It's a fist fight. But the problem was, defensively, I just don't know. Like, if you look at AKA fighters, they're all really good defensively. Cain Velasquez, Daniel Cormier, Khabib, they don't really get hit all that often. And I know Daniel Cormier just got TKO'd by Stipe Miocic, but he gets into these
and
wild
Cain Velasquez fights. By Francis Ngannou.
But again, they're very good fighters who are all defensively sound. Luke Rockhold just never really developed that wrinkle in his game, I don't think. And I do think a large part of it had to be the fact that he was so big for middleweight, he could just lean back a lot of the times. But once people figured that out, it was he was so stuck in that rhythm that he couldn't actually get out of it.
And the shin issues that I kind of brought up is where I was going to go. So in his last fight against Jan Blachowicz, that was the issue. For some reason, he was able to wear a compression sleeve around his leg. And, you know, you heard the horror stories between the fight against Romero and the fight against Blachowicz. It was a long time that he was off. You know, they had to open up the wound. They had to staple it. Then there was infections. It just it was a reoccurring issue. He was going between gyms, aka Hard Knocks. Like, there was just a lot of things. Then he wanted to fight Anthony Smith, like, and he got paired up with Jan Blachowicz.
Well, that's probably a good thing for him.
Yeah. And Jan, again, deciphered the puzzle and figured it out.
Oh, a left hand. That's weird.
Yeah, exactly. And got the finish.
It's unfortunate, though, but it's not surprising. And again, he's another guy like Ben Askren. Luke Rockhold, as goofy and as easy as it is to make fun of him,
doesn't really have the brains for the arts, man.
Does not have the brain. But do you know what Luke Rockhold has? He has the looks, and that's all that matters. Luke Rockhold's just going to keep on modeling and making a ton of money.
I can talk about this, yeah. But you put me in a photo shoot, and nobody's going to buy that product. But if Luke Rockhold reversed the roles, yeah, I mean, he can sell Rob Paul and all.
He has a lot of things outside of fighting, and it seems like ever since he lost Michael Bisping, he's kind of retired after every single fight. Not really officially come out and said something of this magnitude, but he's always like, you know, I like fighting because I'm good at it and I make a lot of money from it, but it's never been like a massive passion of mine throughout life.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, at the end of the first Zoolander movie, Zoolander and Han, you know, they build the school.
Yeah.
Luke Rockhold has to find his school. He has to find his school. So we'll move forward. And Matt,
such a weird segment.
There was a fight announcement that came out this week, close to finalizing, but the February 8th card, there's a lot of moving pieces. There's rumors that John Jones could take on Dominic Reyes at this card.
It's in Houston. Oh, it's in Houston. I'm wrong.
There's rumors that Conor McGregor could take on Donald Cerrone. There's a lot of different fights, and there's been a few that have been announced for just this date. They haven't come out and said, you know, this is official. But Brett Okamoto tweeting out that UFC's close to finalizing Derek Lewis and Aleir Latifi on that date. My tweet, what's the common thread here? Alir Latifi, in his first pro fight, fought Blagoy Ivanov in Bulgaria in 2008.
How did that fight end, Craig?
2-0 contest.
But and why, though?
Blagoy Ivanov fought Derek Lewis this month. So there's some juice. But this has got to be one of the weirdest fight announcements I've seen in a long time.
Do you know
time.
How happy Derek Lewis must have been when he opened his email? Like, yeah. They were like, okay, you can fight Curtis Blaydes, who's the worst matchup in the world for you, because she can take you down. Or you can fight a guy who you probably outweigh, and I'm not even joking, he probably outweighs Alir Latifi by 100 pounds. Not to that degree. But he's so much bigger. He's so much stronger. Everything Latifi does well, Derek Lewis does better. And Alir Latifi's lost 2 in a row. So it's very weird that a guy coming off 2 losses is going up to fight one of the more highly touted heavyweights.
Alir Latifi, I know this from memory, is 5'8" and he has a 75-inch reach advantage. Derek Lewis is 6'3" and has a 79 reach. So,
yeah.
I know Alir Latifi's almost like Daniel Cormier when he fights at light heavyweight, because you're always fighting bigger guys, but this length, reach, height, it's just weird.
Can you please do me a favor, though, and never compare Alir Latifi to Daniel Cormier on this podcast again?
You know where I was going. It's just weird. It's just, it's such a weird fight. Latifi is on a 2-fight losing streak.
Just got KO'd.
Derek Lewis lost 2 in a row, but it was for the title.
And to JDS.
And then he won his last fight against Ivanov this month. So, it's just so weird. I mean, early predictions, yeah, I know where you're
Derek
going.
Derek Lewis could
going.
Take his head off in 10 seconds.
I think Derek Lewis wins as well. The one thing I want to say, Blagoy, when was the last time we saw Blagoy use any Sambo at all? We saw the fight go to the ground a little bit. Yeah, and we saw it against Tuivasa.
But not to a...
You have to think Latifi's going to go in early and either look for the takedown or clinch. But Derek Lewis just pops back up, and that's against bigger guys.
And
he pops back up.
Alir Latifi, and I'm not even going to sugarcoat it, he has terrible cardio. It's not like he has kind of bad cardio or he can overexert himself. No. I've never seen a Alir Latifi fight where at the end of the first round, he is not huffing and puffing.
Where you went, man, that guy looks good in a fight. He looks as good as he looked shirtless on a horse.
Exactly. He always looks good in that scenario. But it's just a really weird fight, like you said. And Derek Lewis, yes, he's a bigger guy, and he looks and he has the style of a guy who should get tired. He has very deceptive cardio. I'm wearing a UFC Halifax shirt right now with Derek Lewis. And we saw him weather a big storm from Travis Brown, who at the time was but he weathered a big storm, he faced adversity, and later in the second round, knocked him unconscious. And I feel like this fight's going to go very soon.
All right, so from one weird fight announcement to a good one.
Yeah,
James Gallagher, it's officially he's going to be taking on Cal Eleanor. Bellator returning to Dublin February 22nd. This one was originally scheduled for their last Bellator card this fall. And it's interesting because it was a weird reason why this fight fell apart. Cal Eleanor, there was some sort of issue with his medicals as far as his brain was concerned.
I don't like that.
I almost thought Cal Eleanor, there's a chance like maybe he's going to have to retire. It was a weird situation. He was on Eurobash with Peter Carroll and Niall McGrath. He talked to Peter about it. He talked to him before that. He was over in Dublin promoting the fight. Like, not that there was a huge rivalry between them, but anytime you're going over to Ireland, especially with a guy like Gallagher, you're going to be the heel. But he was going there to sell tickets and really promote himself. So it's a shame to see the fight fall apart. Of course, Gallagher ends up fighting, a short notice replacement in the main event, gets a quick submission win. But there's a lot of juice to this fight. There's already, built in, like I said, kind of like a rivalry, I guess. Like the story's already there.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hell of a fight. I was surprised Cal Eleanor ended up going with Bellator, the success that he had outside. But this is a really fun fight. And again, this is a tough test for James Gallagher. This is like the next Ricky Bandejas.
Other than Ricky Bandejas, this is the highest level opponent James Gallagher's ever fought. Now, we know how that Bandejas fight went, but Gallagher's kind of grown quite a bit since then. It's just weird. Stop giving him main events. I don't know if his shtick has really grown on people in the European market or in the American market, but from everything I see on Twitter, no one seems to like him for the reasons that people want, that Bellator wants people to like him.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like he's,
we get it.
He's a heel, but like, there's not people that like it.
That's the thing,
Ben Askren.
Yeah.
Ben Askren could play a heel. Colby Covington can
that's
play
like,
a heel.
You know you're doing a good job if people pay to see you lose. Like, that's the ultimate goal. And James Gallagher, I don't really care if he wins or loses at this point.
I will say, though, it is smart putting him back in Dublin because you've already got that built-in fan base. Like I said, Eleanor was up against it, but he was selling tickets. So at least we get this fight. Like, I'm really, really looking forward to this fight. I just hope it doesn't fall apart similar to our main event that we have coming up this weekend.
My just question is, what's the end game for James Gallagher? Like, what's Bellator's big goal? Because he's not going to be a Conor McGregor level superstar. He's had enough big name fights by now that you would think he would start to catch on.
He doesn't fight with that style. He has that persona. We know he
stole it.
You know, people relay it to the SPG and the McGregor and whatever. But you look at his performances, he's all right on the feet. He's not great.
No, his grappling,
but his grappling's really good. So, you know, if he continues on with that and you can grow yourself in your own market, in your own country, and you're a star there, then that's fine. It is.
I don't know. Do they want to push him to a title shot soon? Do they want to just keep on giving him guys that they think he's going to beat?
That's the problem. And I'm glad we're on the subject because, you know, Horiguchi's hurt. So he was supposed to be taking on Kai Asakura at the Bellator Ryzen, you know, mixer. And Horiguchi's out of that fight. He's out for the foreseeable future.
That sucks.
If I'm not mistaken, it was an ACL injury.
He's out for at least 9 months.
He's out for 6 to 9 months. So there you go. There's your division. Your former champion, Darren Caldwell, is booked in the featherweight Grand Prix.
And he can barely make that weight anymore.
Who else do you have at 35-45? You got Higo, you got Dantas, you got Gallagher, you got Eleanor.
I mean, unless Pitbull keeps on saying he can move down, I know he's going to finish up in this tournament, but that's impossible. You could do Juan Archuleta. He can move down. He's kind of done with the tournament.
Just came off a loss.
But if we're being completely honest, Juan Archuleta beats James Gallagher so badly, James Gallagher would not be able to fight for at least six months.
It's weird. At 35, it's weird, but putting him in a main event, I kind of disagree. I think it's a good spot for him.
I do too. I don't know what Bellator's end game is with him. That's all.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, especially with the card this weekend, and I know we're going to talk about it more in our recap and our preview. It's on the Bellator app.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird way.
And I'm sure there's going to be details that come out. Just like with the Bellator odds, you don't get them until like
the day
just before. There's three fights that we have odds for, and we'll talk about them. But it's just weird. Like, figure it out. And one other thing that we could have put up here. So Bellator 244 over in Israel, happened on a Thursday, showed it on a Friday, has the best ratings that Bellator's had in 4 months, which weirds me out because you had McDonald Lima, which was a huge fight on a really good card. You've had Machida fight in Sonnen, like you've had
that Machida fight in Giger.
Or sorry, that's what I meant to say. You've had bigger fights recently. That's weird. Like, yeah. I have an issue with that. That's just weird. That's my opinion. We move
forward.
It's not
like one championship weight cutting weird, but it's definitely like look into it, Eddie Bravo weird.
So the one other weird thing as we get into our next topic, Soren Box taking on Terry Brazier.
What a fight.
Terry Brazier's looked good with Bellator, former Bama 2 division champ. He beat Reese McKee, who's a superstar for Cage Wars, who's your next UFC guy. Soren Box beat Paddy Pimblett.
That was a great fight.
Soren Box was on the posters before MVP was going to fight Derek Anderson, and now he's taking on Giovanni Melillo, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, in Italian. So now it's just weird. It's weird that Soren Box isn't overly promoted, but Paddy Pimblett has a fight coming up this week.
Giannetti.
He's going to be taking on JoJo Giannetti.
He beats him so badly. I'm sorry, JoJo, if you're watching, but Paddy Pimblett's going to choke you out.
The thing with Paddy Pimblett, though, yeah, he talked to Peter Carroll, who just got over to London for Bellator London because he's one of the hardest working guys out
there.
He's
always on the go.
And apparently Paddy, if the UFC calls, he's going to take that phone call. I've seen Paddy in UFC kit firsthand.
It's a great
2 feet in front of me because he was in the corner of Chris Fishgold Moncton. But yeah, I think he goes into the UFC. Give him anybody.
Let's calm down. And like, don't
by
give
anybody,
him like Paul
I
Felder,
mean,
but
no, I mean like at 55, give him anybody.
I want to say give him like a Charles Oliveira, but I think that's way too hard as his first fight.
Give him like
a David Taymor, give him a Mark Chiesa, like some really exciting kind of up and comer that you can put him against because he's only in exciting fights.
This could be, and I don't think I'm overstating it because he's a huge star with Cage Wars.
Now remember, he lost Thornback not that long ago.
But still, put him on a card with Darren Till.
Oh my
god! These
guys
will sell the hell out of it. Like, you know, England. the UK.
Could you imagine if in Europe, if in like a year and a half's time, Paddy Pimblett goes on a run in the UFC, and we can get a headline card by Israel Adesanya versus Darren Till and Dan Hooker versus Paddy Pimblett? That's the ideal scenario for the UFC.
I mean, put that on the marquee. Put that's it on the bill.
Like, if that could somehow come to fruition, that would be such an amazing card and just the best atmosphere ever.
Well, I mean, Matt, I'm really interested in this because, to me, Sornbach and Paddy Pimblett were like my, you know, you want to put the jetpack on them and ride the train, and you don't ride jetpacks and trains, but just follow it into success in the UFC, wherever. And I say UFC because I mean UFC. And they missed out with Bach, especially with the Copenhagen card that they had recently. And now Bellator is kind of flubbing it, putting him up against a really tough test in Terry Brazier. But yeah, hopefully if Pimblett beats Giannetti, and good on Giannetti for taking the fight on short notice. That's not an easy one.
It's a hard fight to take.
And if Pimblett can get over all the injury issues he's had, and you know, the canceled fights and this and that, this is a guy that you want to strap the jetpack onto and follow him, because I think he can really be a star.
There's some guys that come over from Cage Warriors or LFA or just any smaller promotion, and they didn't really fight the best competition, even though they were the champion in that organization. So the UFC is going to use that as like a marketing tool, as, oh, they were the LFA champion. But when you really look at who they fought in that organization, it wasn't, you know, anyone with substance. When you have guys like Back and Pimblett who end up fighting each other, had these great fights, you know that they're ready for the big stage, because they've already fought the best on their way up.
And to throw it a lob, and a lot of people are going to know it, like your Nicholas Dalby and Ross Houston. I'm surprised they didn't rematch that in the UFC. Yeah. And I'm sure if Ross Houston, maybe it's one win, maybe it's two wins, whatever it is, he'll eventually end up there. But you see fights like that. You see guys like Johnson and LFA with a crazy knockout this past week. You see all sorts of, you know, wild things that happen on the regional scene. You do that, maybe you get signed. But you do that and you're able to maybe not repeat it, but string a couple of decent wins together, and there's your shot. So yeah, for Paddy Pimblett, just stay healthy, get a win over Giannetti. It's a recognizable name. It's an Ultimate Fighter guy. There's the juice to get him signed.
And it might not be the best advice, but it is true. If you put on exciting fights, you get promoted more. The wins and losses matter, but the UFC really cares about excitement. Elias Theodoro has a lot of wins, but what's he doing right now?
You look at every regional promotion, I can think of a couple of easy names off the top of my head. Guys that are 18-9, guys and gals, great records, but you don't see them sign because it's just a lot of, it could be split decisions. They got knocked out in their losses and their wins are, you know, lackluster.
Yeah, but if you're a guy like Justin Gaethje, who, yeah, you're just kind of waiting to lose a fight with his style, of course they're going to sign you. UFC wants exciting fighters. They don't really care where you are in the rankings at the end of the day, because you're still going to have champions, whether it's you or whether it's not. So as long as you put on exciting fights and you're in a larger organization of the smaller ones like the Cage Warriors, you're going to get signed eventually.
All right, Matt, the Twitter purge, we had a lot to talk about and a lot of juice in all the topics. And listen, that's kind of the story for this week. I mean, we have some decent cards. We're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about UFC Sao Paulo. So, first of all, we're going to hear from Spretzebox. Yes, we're also going to hear from Strikeforce Energy. You know, always keep that in the cup. It's great stuff. And then also, we're going to get into those fights. So, let's get into the recap and the previews. Fight Night Picks is brought to you by Strikeforce Energy. Head on over to the website, strikeforceenergy.com. If you enjoy the flavor of freedom, the company's veteran-owned and everything's made in America. They've got great apparel. You can turn any 16.9-ounce beverage into an energy drink. There's no sugar, no calories, no stirring, or no shaking required. They also have a line of different products as well as Strikeforce coffee. So if I head into my cart, I've got a 4-count sample pack, I've got a 20-ounce coffee mug, and if I head into that checkout, use the promo code FNP, click to apply, and you're going to save 20% off any order. That's FNP at StrikeForceEnergy.com. So it's brought to you by Spretzebox. Head on over to the website, Spretzebox.com. All you have to do, click to get started. You can either order one of their boxes that has over $100 in value, or maybe you're interested in a single item, like these great socks. So click on them, add them to your cart, head on over to the checkout, and then all you have to do is enter in the promo code FNP as follows here. You'll save 10% off your first box or your complete first order. That's Spretzebox.com. All right, Matt, weekend recap. And listen, not a great weekend in combat sports. Like I said, there was Bellator, but that was Thursday, and then it was a Friday, so we're not going to focus on it, but we will spend some time On UFC on ESPN Plus 22, Blachowicz versus Jacques Array from Sao Paulo, Brazil. It's the biggest city in Brazil, and they got a stinker of a card.
It wasn't good.
One that I bet you Colby Covington's probably smiling about it, because it wasn't a great card for the Brazilian fans. And listen, it's not common that you have a card that has no fight of the nights and four performance bonuses, but that's what we got.
Well, okay, last sometimes weekend. You can have that, but that's like the card's amazing. Or other times you have it and it's like this, where none of the cards.
So if we start at the bottom, you had Tracy Cortez taking on Vanessa Mello.
Terrible fight.
A lot of people really high on Cortez coming into this one. She's battled just a life of adversity. I know her brother had UFC aspirations. He unfortunately passed away due to cancer. Her mother passed away due to cancer. So she's living out her brother's dreams, fighting the UFC, won a contender series this year. She gets a unanimous decision win over Vanessa Mello. It was, you know, lackluster is the word to use. You know, Mello landed some shots, but she's now 0-2 in the UFC, and Cortez picks up her first win. So good to see from her. Your next fight, you had Ariane Lipsky, the former champion from KSW, taking on Isabella De Padua. De Padua coming in on hours' notice. Yeah. Hours' notice. She kind of walked in on weigh-in because you had Veronica Macedo that couldn't weigh in due to migraines. So De Padua weighs in about 5 pounds over. Lipsky agrees to it. De Padua loses. It was 40% of her purse. I don't think it was 30.
Either way.
It was 30 40. Either way. De Padua put it on her for a bit.
No.
But she did.
But like it wasn't.
Lipsky got a win. It's first UFC win. She lost her first two fights. She did not impress in this
fight. No. That's what I mean. Like
her stand up looked all right. Her grappling and takedown defense is not good.
But here's the thing. If she's in top position, she can actually do some half-decent work, like with a ground and pound. But yeah, like you said, she reminds me very much of Sarah McMahon. Sarah McMahon is an Olympic-level wrestler, just hear me out, who's really good on top. But the second she's on her back, just looks completely lost. And Lipsky's in that category.
Olympic-level wrestler. Her wrestling is good, but her grappling is not great.
But still, even if you're on your back, you can get
her jiu-jitsu is not good.
Yes, that's what I mean.
So yeah, it wasn't a great fight in the second one. Then you had Douglas Silva de Andrade taking on Henan Barão. Some people hit me up through email and DM asking us for predictions in this fight. So I took it and I threw out the timestamp. And if you watch our analytics and what we talked about this fight, it went up and then down. Douglas Silva de Andrade, what can I say? The power carries on at 145. Henan Barão's chin isn't as bad as everybody thought it was. Henan Barão might have won a round in this fight, possibly by some people scoring. But what, the fall from grace continues.
So I'm just going to out myself. I could show it in front of camera. I may have texted Craig as this fight was going on and Henan Barão got his first takedown and he was looking half decent. And I said, Henan Barão, turn him back the clock. And the second that text said received, he just started doing really bad. That third round was hard to watch, too. You could tell that every punch that Andrade was throwing hurt Barão to a certain degree. His face is all busted up. It was a hard one to watch. And like you said, just how the mighty have fallen. Like, you have a guy who at one point was not only considered the best bantamweight in the world, he was pound for pound number one. People forget that. He was ahead of Anderson Silva, John Jones, Jose Aldo. Henan Barão was the best fighter on planet Earth at one point. And now you watch him just, you know, losing on the prelims of a fight night card. It's really unfortunate. You've got to think that this is probably his last. He's 2-8 in his last 10, which is an awful record. And it's unfortunate to see, that's all.
It's not good. In the next fight, one of the guys that he beat, Colby Covington.
He did.
When he's on, and he looks like he could go on a run and beat any... I'm serious. He could beat any welterweight when he looks good.
Okay, that's a little far, but yes. There's such a big drop-off between some Morley Alves performances. Sometimes he goes out there and looks like he'd be a top-five talent, and then other times he goes out there and he just doesn't do much.
Just speaking from the way that I feel, if I was somebody close to Morley Alves, tell him to go to one of the gyms in Florida and just get the rounds ATT. In. Do what, you know, we always wanted Gilbert Burns to do. And look at Gilbert Burns. Warley Alves just has to bring everything together. The grappling is there. The jiu-jitsu ability is there. The defensive wrestling isn't great, but the striking can be really good. And he's got a lot of power. But taking on a guy like Rude Boy, Randy Brown, you know he's gritty and he's going to last. And that's what he did here.
But you don't really know him for doing triangles off his back to a guy who's black belt jiu-jitsu. Here's the thing. Morley Alves, between that first and second round, I think he was either hurt or there's something going on with Morley Alves, because there was a noticeable difference where they got up at the end of the second round and Morley's walking back. He just looked completely disinterested in fighting from that point on.
Like, I don't know about Alves, but Sergio Moraes, but we'll get into that later on.
But Worley Alves should never be triangled by Randy Brown, who just kind of fell down. Like, that's the thing. Worley Alves should not get submitted by that. Like, to Damian Maia, he shouldn't be caught in that kind of stuff. So for it to happen against a guy like Randy Brown, and he didn't really even look to be defending the choke all that much. He kind of sat there, got put in it slowly, and then tapped out. Like, I just feel like there was something off. That's all.
It was weird. If we continue on our next fight, this would have probably been my fight of the night if I could have given one. Trinaldo, Bobby Green. Poor Bobby Green. Like, in decisions,
he just doesn't have enough output. That's the problem. Bobby Green's never really lost a decision. He's just never won one either. That's honestly... And that doesn't make any sense, but Bobby Green, all of his fights, he doesn't really get hit all that much, but he doesn't have enough output to get him up on the scorecards enough, and that's why he ends up fighting in all these close decisions.
Trinaldo gets the win. He is really still today pushing for a fight against Edson Barboza.
I don't think
it's going to happen, but it's kind of neat to see a guy that's like 40 that's able to put on the performances that Trinaldo is able to put on. We talked about it when we were talking about this fight last week, the fact that he beat Hernandez.
Like, he did.
I thought he beat Hernandez.
Like you said, even at this point in his career, he's a very talented fighter. He puts on exciting fights too, for the most part.
Your next fight, you had Ricardo Ramos taking on Eduardo Garigori. I said maybe Garigori's got power, and he really surprised me in his UFC debut. Ramos just showed us, like, again, why he's so good.
He cut to him like a hot knife through.
Another great win. You have to expect a bigger step up in competition. Good job, especially moving from 35 to 45. Exactly. The power just carried on and seems to have gone up a little bit. Your next fight, again, this was just a weird fight. James Krause right now is on a 6-fight win streak.
Which is wild.
If you don't count the 2-1 stint on The Ultimate Fighter. He's underrated. It was a question that we talked about in Between the Links. Is he the most underrated fighter in the UFC? I said Claudio Silva.
No. Santos.
Santos was the other one that I picked. But James Krause is putting on good performances against decent competition for Moraes. 3-fight losing streak. He's been finishing these fights, and he looked hurt and disinterested. And I'll look it up as we talk about it, but he's got a lengthy medical suspension right now. This was just a weird fight.
Here's the cool thing about James Krause. I want to focus on the positive first. James Krause doesn't even need to fight. He doesn't even want to fight half the time. He's like, no, I'm just good at it, and I make some extra money. But I've got a successful gym, and I coach a lot of other fighters. So, like, fighting's not something I need to do. And I feel like, do you remember when Mike Brown was at the end of his career, and he was cornering? You'd see him in a fighter's corner every other weekend, and then he'd come out and fight. I feel like James Krause is going to fall into that category. Like, in 5 years, we're going to be like, do you remember when James Krause used to fight? Because currently, he's one of the best coaches in the world. He's got a lot of fighters under the UFC staple. Like I said, any other weekend that you watch a James Krause fight, he's probably in someone's corner. And all his fighters are doing quite well, so really good win for him. But like you said with Moraes, it's just weird. Like, he's one of those guys, he's very inconsistent. At his best, he looks really good. And at his worst, he looks awful.
He's one of those, like, IBJJF, ADCC type of guys.
He did get choked out by Gilbert Burns, though, in his last
jiu-jitsu. Yeah, but I mean, he's that good at jiu-jitsu. He's older, he's in his late 30s. And to be clear, suspended 180 days or until cleared by a neurologist. Also suspended 60 days with no contact for 45 days. So, interesting stuff there, but... You have to think that's probably it for Sergio Moraes in the UFC.
Oh, yeah,
losing like that and putting on such a weird performance. And if your fighter's that hurt and disinterested, between the second and third rounds, opportunity to throw in the towel, because in the second round, he looked piss poor.
Okay, but I don't want to take away from the fact that I genuinely think it was more James Krause looked good than Sergio Moraes looked bad. With the Worley Alves thing, it did look like there was a stark contrast between him in first round and him in the second round. Like, he just completely changed his body language. Moraes kept on kind of fighting. It was just once he realized he couldn't win anymore, then he became disinterested.
It was a weird performance. That was our featured prelim. We moved on to the main card. Wellington Turman taking on Marcus Perez.
It was okay.
It was a good fight. Yeah, like, and Turman put on a good performance. So you can focus on that. For Perez, he doesn't look like the guy that came into the UFC. He doesn't beat good competition. I mean, he has already wins when we previewed it. He has good wins, but like, you put on a performance like that, the only thing people are going to remember the Joker makeup from before the fight, and they're not going to think of the performance he put on there, which wasn't great.
they're not even going to think about this fight. That's what I mean. If you're Perez and you lose, it's really not the end of the world. He's probably going to get at least one more opportunity. I thought he looked good in some moments. He just didn't have any cardio. Like, Tormon just stayed steady the whole entire fight. And Perez would just kind of like, wait, get hit 5 or 6 times, and then throw a big shot and hope for it to land.
And we focused on it a lot in the preview. Tormon's ceiling's higher. Younger, and he has a lot of fights in his young career. But my opinion, move him up. Heinisch went up pretty darn quick.
He fought every other month, though.
Yeah, move him up slow, but Tormon could be I'm serious. They're looking for Brazilian stars. He could be one of those guys.
I don't think
so. He has put on good performances. The split loss to Carl Robeson in his debut, and then a good win against Marcus Perez. Just continue building him
up. I just think the sample size is so small at this point, especially in the UFC, to even think that he could be a large Brazilian star for them.
Take it slow. Take it slow is my point. And you want to talk about Brazilian stars, you're not going to get one out of your next fight because you had two Brazilians.
You did.
Antonio Jajoyo taking on Andre Muniz. This is one of those fights that nobody's ever going to remember unless you're friends and family of Andre Muniz or Antonio Jajoyo. Neither one of these guys anything of a ceiling in the UFC. Muniz has 23 pro fights.
Did Muniz take all of your money?
He's a submission type of guy. Antonio Jajoyo, you know, 9-3. We talked about him in the preview, replicating Thiago Santos. Andre Muniz trains with Thiago Santos, so you knew what to expect. He gets a decision here, but it's a forgettable fight. And you put either of these guys against high-level competition, it's just not going to happen.
I could not agree more. Very fight, not much to it. Like we said, you can really say that about the whole card. Like, there were a lot of fights like that where after the week, you're on to the next thing. You're going to completely forget they ever happened. But in the next fight, we have something to talk about.
Charles Oliveira, Jared Gordon was one of the worst matchups I've seen in a long time. Jared Gordon said that he wanted to come out as, you know, the biggest Rocky underdog and get a win. I'm the biggest underdog on the card. I'm going to go out there and get a win. And Charles Oliveira just decided to take that knob where his power is and just break it.
Put it to 100.
He gets a first-round knockout. His striking of late has looked amazing. I'm going to click on him here. The performances have been great. 6 wins in a row, 6 by finish. The one thing that I worry about, I want to see him take on top competition. We'll talk about that in a second. Clay Guida, Christos Yagos, Jim Miller, David Tamor, Nick Lentz, Jared Gordon. Not the cream of the crop.
David Tamer wins a really good one.
The losses are against some of the best of the best. I mean, Paul Felder, Lamas, Pettis, Holloway, Edgar, Swanson, Cerrone, Miller. But still, they're the best of the best. So he only loses to the best. Again, I want to see this guy tested against a top 15 opponent. I want to see this guy tested against a top 10 opponent. On different podcasts, I've named who I want to see, and I bet you we're both
going to throw the same name. I texted you the second this fight was done, and I said, Charles Oliveira needs to fight Kevin Lee next.
I think Kevin Lee's the guy.
Because Kevin Lee...
Kevin Lee or Ally Quinta, those are the two guys. But to me, I think Kevin Lee's the matchup that's going to bring out just the clash of styles, and it's going to be a fun one.
Exactly, because when you look at what does Kevin Lee do, he's a phenomenal wrestler, and he's a back taker, too. He's not just a pressure wrestler like a guy like Usman who's going to take you down and beat you up. No, he's going to take you down and try to get to your back. If you try grappling with Charles Oliveira, though, he's going to find your back eventually. And that's kind of the fun thing about both guys. They're both very grappling heavy. Oliveira's been submitted in the past. And same thing with Kevin Lee. He's been submitted in the past. So both guys' offensive ability on the ground is just so high that it's almost guaranteed to have a finish. And even just the striking. Like, you look at how good Kevin Lee looked in his last fight where he almost
decapitated. Or the Barboza fight.
Or the Barboza fight. But just being on a stand-up level against Gregor Gillespie when he took his head off with that head kick. And when you look at what Charles Oliveira can do on the feet, he has that very high tie style, throws a lot of leg kicks. It makes for a perfect matchup.
You, in my mind, you can put Charles Oliveira up against anybody and he's going to look good. But put Kevin Lee against... Just don't put him against a boxer.
I don't want to see Kevin Lee fight Dustin Poirier because, like, that's the worst matchup for him. Yeah. But, yeah, I think... And Kevin Lee still needs, like, a win or two before you can start looking ahead for him. I feel like he has to fight guys behind him in the rankings just due to the fact that he is on a bit of a skid. So do this one. Let's say he blows the door off Charles Oliveira. Then you can put him up against the guy ahead of him.
Yeah, exactly. So that makes a lot of sense. Guys coming off of wins, now, especially a big win streak.
Quick thing. For Jared Gordon, I don't think he's going to get cut, even though we did mention the fact that his only wins are against guys who are no longer in the UFC, and he's been stopped in all of his losses. He's
1-4.
I understand he's 1-4, but I feel like he's going to be able to go to the UFC and say, yeah, I lost my last one by knockout, but I fought the 13th ranked guy in the world. So I don't want to say it was a no-lose situation because, you know, he got finished quite brutally, but you lost to a guy who you shouldn't have been fighting anyways because he was way ahead of you, And they're probably going to give you one more fight due to the fact that your friend's Paul Felder.
See what happens. In our co-main event, you had Paul Craig taking on Mauricio Shogun Hua. This is an interesting fight, because I scored this fight oddly, and I talked about it on the Scoring MMA podcast with James Lynch. I scored our co-main and our main event really weird. A lot of people disagreed. A lot of people bounced back and forth on all these fights. So I scored the fight a 10-8 round one Craig,
okay,
a 10-9 round two Hua, and a 10-9 round three for Craig. So I had a 29-27 for Paul Craig. The striking output in the first round was, it was about four times as much for Paul Craig over Shogun. Four or five times. After that, it evened out, and the third round was close.
I did have this fight as a draw. I didn't think that they were going to call it a draw, but I did agree. I thought that Paul Craig won that first round very handily. It wasn't one of those 10-8s where you're like, damn, they probably could have stopped it, but it was just, he was completely in control and he was never in danger.
And the accumulation of damage on Shogun's face as well, if you take that into consideration.
Now, I always cheer for Paul Craig. I'm really down on him after this fight, if I can be completely honest. It was his fight to lose. In the third round, you could tell on the feet, he was much quicker than Shogun, and Shogun's strikes were very labored by that time. All Paul Craig had to do was keep on throwing the jab and move out of the way, and he would have been able to win that round very easily. But instead, he decides to do what Paul Craig does, and that's pull guard. And I know you got to do what got you to the dance, but you're probably not going to submit Shogun off your back, especially if you had about 7 minutes up until that point on the ground to do it, and he didn't really get close with anything up until that point. All he had to do was keep the fight standing, and he decided to pull guard and be on his back for the last, like, 2 minutes of the fight. So, a very frustrating fight to watch, because you know that, in your heart of hearts, Paul Craig definitely should have won this fight. He had all the opportunities in the world to win this fight.
Which, a lot of people disagree, because he was a +225, +250 underdog.
While you're watching the fight, you could definitely understand, okay, Paul Craig's teeing off on Shogun on the feet. He had him up against the cage, he's beating the brakes off him. He was beating him in every area of the fight, except for when Shogun was on top of him in his guard, and he decided to go to that.
And in those striking positions, one would think, and a lot of people had said, Shogun's going to have an advantage there.
And that's what I thought too, but we saw the fight definitely didn't play out how I thought it was going to go.
And, you know, keep retirement talk aside for Shogun, do you think that a rematch is likely? I know they've talked about maybe having another card in Glasgow. Maybe you have a Scottish card with Calderwood and Stevie Ray and Paul Craig. Do you think maybe this could call main event? Do you think it would happen?
Okay.
You rarely see rematches.
Exactly, especially after a terrible fight like that. This is, okay, Edson Barbosa and Paul Felder fought twice. They've had two really close fights, and they've had two Fight of the Night caliber fights. Paul Felder said, I'll give Edson Barbosa another fight, but it has to be the main event. Now, if it's a case like that, where those two guys, you're like, oh, they're going to give each other concussions, and everyone's going to cheer, you can do that a third time or a second time. This you can't. It was a terrible fight, and it just showed that Shogun's definitely not what he used to be. He's not even really in that gatekeeper role anymore, and that Paul Craig needs to do something different in his training. Whether it's a confidence thing, whether, I don't know what it is, you can't pull guard in a fight that you're winning when you know you can't submit the guy with 2 minutes left. It just doesn't make any sense. And you know that unless you get that submission in those last 2 minutes, all that time on top counts for a win by Shogun. That's all time in his favor. So it was just a really weird performance. It was unfortunate. And the co-main and main event might be like top three worst UFC fights just back to back in a very long time.
Yeah, so I mean, in our main event, you had Jan Blachowicz taking on Jacare Souza. Odds actually closed in pretty close. You know, in favor of Souza, they went, you know, closer his way. So this is a weird fight. It was a split decision win for Blachowicz. You know, there was some 48-47s. There was a 49-46. This is where I went a little weird.
Just a bunch of 10-10s.
I had it. Yeah, I could see a 10-10. After three rounds, I saw a lot of 30-27s for Jacare.
So did I, but I didn't agree with them.
I had it 30-27 Blachowicz. Oh, and then, you know, and you know, go back and watch it, but rounds 3, 4, and 5.
Don't do that to yourself. Don't
rounds 3, 4, and 5, a lot of people scored for Blachowicz. Yes. So in that, I had a 50-45 for Jan Blachowicz. And I didn't think it was, you know, I didn't think it was out of the realm of possibility. And the one thing I want to say, a lot of people in rounds 1 and 2 for sure, round 3 was closer, but rounds 1 and 2, a lot of people took octagon control and the push and the forward pressure and octagon control Jacare Souza. But if you look at the unified MMA rules, that's really low on the totem pole.
But not much happened in those rounds, so you have to take that into consideration at a certain point.
To me, it was, you look at the striking outputs in the first three rounds, Jan Blachowicz won in those categories by a large margin.
But this is the problem when you can't really look at the stats. I do agree with you, and I thought Jan won round 3, 4, and 5. I did think Jacare won round 1 and 2, if I'm being completely honest. And I was surprised that this went to a split decision, because I thought, like many people thought, Jacare is the only Brazilian who, when it comes to a close decision, can't win in Brazil. Kelvin Gastelum, split decision loss. Jan Blachowicz, split decision loss. Very odd, but I thought that Jacare won the first two rounds. This is why. I thought, like you said, he did push the pressure. He was the one engaging in everything. Even if Jan was landing two shots to every one that Jacare was landing, Jacare was the one initiating that exchange in the first place. And even though it's not the best argument, just because I'm saying it doesn't mean that it's right, but one of Jacare's punches should count for at least two of Jan's jabs. If you jab me twice, but I hit you with an overhand right, I'm pretty sure I did more damage to you. So I understand that might not be the ideal way to judge a fight. And I might be talking out of my ass right now, but I do think Jacare has a claim to winning this fight. I thought it was an awful main event, though. And if you're trying to get a title shot, this is not the way to do it.
So there's a couple things to try and break down here. And that's the reason why we do the review, even if it was a bad week. There's a lot of different things to dissect here. So you're assuming that John Jones is going to take on Dominic Reyes, whether it's in or January or February,
in
one
the
of the
recent
two.
Future, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The near future.
Near future.
Jan Blachowicz most likely going to have to take on somebody in order to move forward. Anthony Smith, and I would say Thiago Santos, the likely guy. Santos is out there hitting the heavy
Santo
bag.
Santos KO'd him, though, so you can't do that fight right away because you just beat him.
I said that on Between the Links. I did not regret saying it, even though maybe I actually did forget about that fight, that it actually happened, and that stuff happens.
Yeah,
but
it's not like that fight wasn't really close.
I found my hill. I was ready to die on it, and I just dug my heels in and kept my
going. I think what they're going to end up doing is you're going to have to do Dominic Reyes versus John Jones, depending on how healthy Thiago Santos is, because I know he is starting to get back into training. He looks to be in phenomenal shape. Like, I don't know how he's as big as he is, but you have to do Thiago Santos versus Corey Anderson, I think, and then you do Anthony Smith versus Jan Blachowicz.
And the fight that I see being likely for Jacare Souza, there's two fights. One of them won't happen. One of them might happen. I have three.
Okay, you go and then I'll go.
Ryan Spann.
Oh, didn't see that coming. Good call.
Ryan Spann. Devin Clark.
No, that's never going to happen. He's too big of a name.
No, you're not going to like this one.
What?
Johnny Walker. Brazil
and
Brazil.
That could happen because Johnny Walker's a big enough name. They're both coming off losses. Personally, I actually look ahead. I think if you lose such a close fight to a guy who is in that kind of title shot conversation, that you don't have to fight a guy who's so far behind you. I think he's going to fight the loser of Volkan versus
Rakic.
Versus Rakic, yeah. I couldn't think of who he's fighting, which is so embarrassing. I'm so excited for that fight. But yeah, I think he's going to either fight the loser of that. Ali Latifi moving up does kind of complicate things because you would think that that'd be kind of an ideal opponent for him. But here's the good thing. Light heavyweight's not the ghost town that it used to be. There are a lot of fun matchups on the horizon that you can do. Even if you want to do like Shogun versus Souza.
And there's another one, and a lot of people throwing this out there. You could have Shogun just fight Sam Alvey. It was already supposed to happen. True. Or you throw Sam Alvey against Jacare Souza. There's a lot of moving pieces at light heavyweight, and there's not a lot of fights that are booked. The only real big fight that you can think of is the Rakic fight against Uzdemir and possibly your title fight. You just don't know anything because it's not announced and set in stone. So there's a lot of different moving pieces, but you have to think a win would have meant more, of course, for Jacare Souza because he was ranked lower in the middleweight division than Blachowicz was ranked in the light heavyweight division.
That makes sense, but I consider Jacare and Shogun to be somewhat in the same position, even though Jacare is still more competitive against the elite than Shogun is. They're in the legacy division, if you will. Wins and losses don't really matter at a certain point because you can kind of go off your resume. So the number next to your name doesn't really mean anything if you're a Shogun or if you're a Jacare. There's always going to be fun matchups for you to be in.
The only question I have for you, and we'll leave this here after this one. So Jan Blachowicz continues to win. He's put on, he's what now, 7-1 or 6-1 in his last 7 or 8
fights.
He's
only lost to
Thiago. Yeah, that's the only loss. Jacare, it's checkered of late.
But he fought just killers.
But he's fought the top guys. He was a Strikeforce middleweight champion. Shogun, yeah, you can say he can rest on his laurels. UFC champ, had a lot of success and pride. But for Jacare Souza, is this a future, and not, you know, because the UFC would define it this way, because they bought out Strikeforce, they out WEC and Pride. Is he a Hall of Famer?
He's an MMA Hall of Famer. He's not a UFC Hall of Famer. And I know, like, there isn't an MMA Hall of Fame, so you can't really put him in there. But yes, if you look at the body of work that he's done, he's a martial arts Hall of Famer, not even MMA. You just have to take it, because I do consider all of his jiu-jitsu credentials have to be brought into account. His Strikeforce title, he was basically in the top three of the middleweight division for like 10 years. And even when he was outside of the UFC, people thought that he was the number one middleweight in the world. And when you look at the performances that he has put on the UFC, even when he came and knocked out Yushin Okami, who was ranked like number three at the time, and he's always been in the top ever since. I don't think he's a UFC Hall of Famer because he never did get the title. And to me, that does mean a lot. I know Uriah Faber's in and he didn't have a title, but Uriah Faber is really like,
just kept fighting for the title and losing.
Exactly. But like, he's the one who completely grew the bantamweight and the smaller divisions in MMA. So you have to give him so much more respect just for what he did promotionally. Jacare, even though he was a fan favorite, he's kind of a cult classic MMA fighter. He never got that title. He never even got a title shot. And when people think of Jacare, they're probably not going to remember him as the guy who was the Strikeforce champion, the guy who is the multiple-time World Jiu-Jitsu champion. They're going to remember him as the guy who fought Yoel Romero, and he should have won, but he lost. They're going to remember him as the guy who never got the title shot that he probably should have got, but they're also going to remember the losses.
He fought Robert Whittaker.
Exactly. He was the guy who people would beat to get their title shot at a certain point. Robert Whittaker beat Derek Brunson, and I jumped on that train. And then he fought Jacare, and I remember we watched it at your friend's house, and I was like, guys, I know Jacare is really good, but Robert Whittaker is something special. And Robert Whittaker went out there and put on probably the best performance anyone's ever put on against Jacare, and ever since that fight, we just haven't seen the same Jacare. So, yes, I think he's an MMA Hall of Famer. I don't think he's a UFC Hall of Famer. It's like Carmelo Anthony. He's a basketball Hall of Famer, not an NBA Hall of Famer.
So if we move along from the Orange to the NBA to the Bigs to the Nuggets, if we move along through from our recap to our preview, we got to get excited again because you have Cage Warriors 111 taking place this weekend. It's on Friday. You have three title fights. If we look down through it, there's so many different matchups. There's a lot of juice in a lot of these fights. There's a lot of people that you could eventually see popping up in the UFC. I know some people might be upset, you know, if we just breeze through it. But if we look at a couple of the prelim fights and we look at the main card, first of all, one prelim fighter that I want to talk about because I play this over and over in my head and it's weird. Kingsley Crawford is taking on Scott Butters. I interviewed Daniel Crawford before he made his Bellator debut. And he said that one of my training partners is Kingsley Crawford, no relation. And I play that in my head. I thought it was the funniest thing that he ever said because it wasn't a joke. He just goes, there's no relation. I thought it was pretty funny, but Kingsley Crawford fighting there, training partner of Daniel Crawford. Mikey Ekundayo is one of those fighters that you want to watch at 135, and I can say that easily because he's 7-1. But this is a guy that, so undefeated, great wins, and then he fought Jack Shore, and a lot of people were excited, and he lost that fight in the third round. That was for the bantamweight title. He's going to be taking on Luca Iovine, who's 12-4. It should be a good fight, and if Ekundayo can get a win there,
Ekundayo's legit.
Expect another couple of fights maybe at the Cage Warriors level or maybe Bellator even picks him up. It'd be a smart signing by them.
It would.
But that's one of those guys that you should watch. Jordan Barton, of course, 5-0-1, taking on James Hendon. You're gonna want to see some of these fighters, but we move up into the main card. So first of all, the Paddy Pimblett, Joe Giannetti fight. We talked about it. Joe Giannetti, since the UFC, since the Ultimate Fighter, so he loses on the Ultimate Fighter. And then he
loses in the Ultimate Fighter finale, and then the UFC decides to not sign him even though he made it to the finals, and then he had to draw in his next fight.
Against Josh Harvey, who, exactly, you know, we know quite well from the local NEF scene. And then he loses again to Dwan Owens in Cage Titans, and then he beats Keenan Raymond. So you're losing to guys that are 17-13-1, and then you're beating guys that are 3-6.
Paddy Pimblett's probably going to flying triangle.
So people can criticize us for picking on these records, but listen, seeing some of these guys fight firsthand on regional promotions that have records like that, you know what you're getting. You're not getting UFC level talent. That's not to take anything away from Joe Giannetti because he fought to it, and that split against Mike Trezano was really close.
We've seen
Mike Trezano's a good fighter.
He is.
We know how
good Mike is. That was one of the worst fights I've ever watched, though.
And the draw, a lot of people in attendance have said Josh Harvey won that fight.
Yeah.
Like, Josh Harvey won it.
And you're fighting Paddy Pimblett, who the UFC's tried to sign, and he's one of the faces of Cage Warriors.
Tried to sign him twice, exactly. And this is on about a week's notice. So, listen, first of all, props to Joe Giannetti for taking the fight.
Elephant size.
You lose, this is still a good thing for you. And for Paddy Pimblett, we talked about it. Now, if we move on, Jolinton Santos Luderbach, I talked about him before he fought Dricus Duplessis, and that was Duplessis' kind of comeback fight at KSW 50. But this is a guy that had wins over, as you can see, Craig White, Alex Oliveira, There's a lot of fighters moving down through this list. Another Alex Oliveira that you're going to recognize. But he's taking on a guy in Alex de Kid Lahore, who I've been pretty high on for a long time. We've been following along with him for a long time. He's one of the guys that would love to see MMA legalized in France, but fights against Terry Brazier, Ion Pascu, Tim Burnett, Nicholas Dalby. The list goes on and on and on of people that you recognize. Oh, Richard Keeley. You know that name because he fought MVP. But Alex Lahore, a lot of finishes. He's a really exciting guy to watch. You know, it's if you're following along this late in the video, you're probably a Cage Warriors fan. You're going to want to hear
some good things. Or you're a KSW fan, you recognize him from that.
Exactly. Modestus Bukauskas taking on Ricardo Nasiglia. Point being here, I've seen a lot of interviews with Modestus this week. He's taken on an 8-1 fighter over from Italy. But for Bukauskas, you look at these fights, I mean, he wins the light heavyweight championship. He's beating Marcin Wojcik, who a lot of people recognize, the Polish giant, 12-7, fought Scott Ashkam, fought Tomasz Narkun. He's fought some high-level guys, won his last fight as well. So this is a big fight. I expect you don't see a lot of light heavyweights come over from Cage Warriors and find a lot of success. No. I can think of a couple off the top of my head, but you don't see a lot of guys in some of the bigger weight classes. You look at his opponent, 8-1, like I said, 30 years old. The one loss to Michael Olszewski.
It's going
to
happen.
We know he's pretty good in the UFC. And you look at a guy, and again, these records are deceiving because you're beating guys that are 9-11, 7-12, 3-6-1. It's just tough. I've looked at this fight quite a bit, and I've watched, again, Bukauskas' fight tape, watched a lot of the interviews, speaks really, really well. This is a guy with another one of those wins. You never know. I mean, 10-2, yeah, it's probably too early. But he's one of those guys that you want to watch. You move up, Mads Brunell.
He's very good.
Yeah, I mean, the UFC run wasn't great.
No.
But this is another Danish fighter.
That's the thing.
This is another Danish fighter that's had success outside of the UFC. Goes to the UFC. Didn't go great. Nicholas Dalby. But he's 35. Now he's back in Cage Warriors and he's doing it. I mean, he beat Dean Truman by Japanese necktie. And Dean Truman was the champ. Dean Truman's had a lot of good performances, but yeah, I mean, you're losing to guys like Michel Prezeris, who's effing huge for the division, and Arnold Allen's a pretty darn good fighter.
Ranked 15th.
So, I mean, that's fine. Mike Santiago wasn't that great, but still, he comes back and three finishes in a row, two Japanese neckties in a row.
Wild.
And Mads Brunell's a great fighter. You're taking on Steve Aimable. Diddy Kong's a great nickname. You look at the quality of wins, too. I mean, guys like Liam Bennett, guys like Josh Abraham, Decky McLean. Good fighters in his last three. It should be a good contest. He's been kicking around with Cage Warriors for some time. But Mads Brunell's the guy that you're going to look at. And then, of course, in your main event, you get James Webb taking on Matthias Frederick. You look at the two. 7-2-1. Of course, Frederick's one of those recognizable names from, just the European scene. Going to be taking him on again because it was a majority draw in their last fight. So something to keep in mind, especially, at the top of the card. But really, you got a rematch there. Brunell's your UFC champ.
Not a UFC champ.
He was in the UFC. He's your champ. Bukauskas looking to, hold on to his title. There's the juice there. Matt, we move on to Bellator. There's fights on this card that people aren't even going to realize are on this card, and then you're going to look back and say, man, I wish I saw that. Chris Bungard, Tim Burnett, UFC vet Robert Whiteford taking on UFC vet Sam Cecilia.
That's a fun one.
Alfie Davis, big name. Alessandro Bodhi, big name. This card, in my opinion, is bigger than Cage Warriors. Cage Warriors has a lot of good fights, and those three title fights you're not going to want to miss. But Charlie Ward, Pietro Panini, they were building up that fight on its own, and a lot of people are going to recognize Charlie Ward. You got the Canadian Jeremy Pelty taking on Tom Mearns. If you read that quick, you might have read Tim Means.
That's what I did.
Tom Mearns. Kent Kopinen, he's main evented before, taking on Andy Manzolo.
Denise Kielholt's coming back.
Nathan Rose, who I'm really high on, taking on Harry Hardwick. Denise Kielholt's taking on Sabri Sengul.
Not familiar with her.
You move up, Walter Gahadza, we've talked to you about him before, Lewis Long, these guys are guys that you're going to recognize. Aiden Lee, who if his jiu-jitsu's on point, it's going to be a great fight, taking on Damian Frankovic. Charlie Leary, Tim Wilde, another good one. And then, of course, Terry Brazier taking on Soren Bok in his debut. That's honest.
Like, I think Bok wins.
But between that and the co-main event, those are my fights of the weekend. But you're not going to want to miss those two fights.
No.
Matt, your co-main event. Undefeated Fabian Edwards taking on Mike Shipman. You can put stock into this fight because they've called each other out for a long time. Only trouble is, Mike Shipman lost his last fight.
And exactly. Matt, it kind of takes away from the shine of the matchmaking.
I'm going to pull it up because Mike Shipman got finished by Costello Van Steenis in that fight.
Like,
and that's...
minute.
Yeah, that's why there's an issue with it, because if they were both undefeated, that's awesome. Or sorry, if Shipman was on a big run,
yeah,
still
exactly.
Taking on Fabian Edwards, there'd be some juice there. But Fabian Edwards, the ceiling's really high.
Yeah, he's looked great as of late. He's basically a better version. He's a worse version of Brother, but they do a lot of the similar things. He gets a lot more finishes, though. Here's my problem with Fabian Edwards. When he looks good, he looks like a world champion. He looks very human, though, about 30% of all his fights.
There's times where it's not like he's taking a round off, but he just kind of slows down. Like, the fight against Neto, he looked good, but that was kind of a showcase.
But in the Lee Chadwick fight, like, he didn't look good at all.
He looked tired.
He looked sluggish.
And he gets the win over Jonathan Busuku in his last one, which is great. But, yeah, you're taking on a legit test of Mike Shipman. I know he got finished in his last fight, but we've got an intriguing matchup.
I think Fabian wins, but he's always kind of got that one dud of a performance, and you never really know when it's going to be. So it's definitely a very dangerous fight for him.
And we have odds on this fight. Edwards is just over a 2-1 favorite here. In the Brazier-Bok fight, they're somewhat close. Bok's a favorite, but a -145 there. Edwards, I think, you know, if you're in the pick'em game, I think there's value on Shipman at that. But I just think Edwards brings more to the table.
I agree. And if
he's on, I would take him. And in your main event,
MVP's going to win by knockout. There's a fun fact.
It's weird because this main event was put out there a couple of weeks ago. And it wasn't even this fight. It was supposed to be Michael Venom Page against Derek Anderson. And Anderson looked good in
his
last fight.
Which is a legitimately great fight.
Yeah, we go down, you can see Anderson withdrew, which is a shame because it would have been a good fight. Now he's going to be taking on Gianni.
Now, Craig, I have an idea to grow the podcast really big. Can you just put your name in the hat to fight Michael Venom Page? Because I think there's a chance you might actually be able to get it eventually.
Richard Keeley's a librarian. Richard Keeley got the fight.
There you go.
So you look at it, I mean, he beat Will Chope in his last fight, so there's that. But yeah, you know, you get knocked out in two fights before. You get knocked out in Venator, and maybe Colangelo.
Maybe he's very good.
Great name.
Dope.
Great name. I mean, maybe it's a burner account for Brian Colangelo on Twitter. But still, it's just a tough one for MVP.
MVP's going to jump, spin about 9 times, and kick him in the head.
It's going to be, yeah, it's not going to be what you want. So we move forward. This was why I put the tweet out there, to see what people were thinking. Gerald Harris, Seth Bajinski, that's a good fight.
It is.
It's a good fight on a card coming at you from Newkirk, Oklahoma, but you got two former UFC names fighting on the same card. It's something that you can sell to the fans. It should be a fun one. And listen, I mean, Bajinski can get it down on the ground. Gerald Harris has great wrestling and a lot of power. And in his last fight against Anatoly Tarkov, he almost knocked him out.
He did, and then he got choked out.
So there's juice in that fight. LFA 79 is fine. You got Brandon Royval taking on Nate Williams for the flyweight title in the main event. But really, I said it from the start, Zviad Lazisvili taking on Josh Huber. That's where the money's at, because for your Georgian fighter, again, making his US debut, making his LFA debut, he's looking to skyrocket himself into a UFC contract. A lot of finishes on his record as well. For Josh Huber, he's been around the block. You can see that Tapology ranking there. You look down through the card, a lot of good fighters, as you would expect from an LFA card. And make sure, if you're going to follow along, if you're not going to watch it, just
follow
along on Twitter, look at the results. There's two fights over on the CFFC card. You've got the light heavyweight title on the line between Mike Biggie Rhodes taking on Najeem Wally. A lot of people might recognize Mike Rhodes. He's had a lot of big fights in the past. But the fight that I'm interested in, it's listed as a cruiserweight fight here between William Knight and Tafon and Chukwi. There's a lot of intrigue in that fight because with William Knight, he had a finish win over on the Contender Series. He's had a finish since then. 6-0, all by finish. He's 7-1 as an amateur, and then he lost like a kickboxing bout at the end to Jorgen De Castro, who's in the UFC. So William Knight, maybe with another performance.
Nah, he needs 3 or 4, I think.
You see him into the UFC, but he's on a developmental deal, and it's a good fight for him. So if you're looking forward to this card, maybe pay attention to that. Apart from that, again, some other regional names that you might want to, you know, brush up on and pay attention to. Same as Ring of Combat. And I bring this up because you see Ring of Combat cards from New Jersey. You look at them, you think, hey, every now and again, there's some intrigue. But again, George Sullivan taking on Joe Riggs. And a lot of people are going to recognize Diesel Joe Riggs. But George Sullivan, this is his third or fourth fight outside of the UFC.
Why are we talking about this?
His last fight in the UFC was against Mickey Gall. So there's reason to look at it. Also, Tim Dueling, who's had a lot of really tough fights. And if you don't believe me, I'm pulling up Tim Dueling's record because a lot of people are going to recognize the losses. Guys like Bill Algeo, guys like Dennis Paiva, guys like Matt Bissett, Julio Arce. So you might look at some of these regional cards, look at some of these records and think, man, he's 8-6. What's the point, Craig? At featherweight, he's only lost to good fighters, the guys that have been on Contender Series. So there's my point. And Joseph Pfeiffer fighting for the 185-pound title is another one of those guys you might want to watch. Brave CF, Stephen Lomond's a really good guy to watch because he's fought Franz Malambo a number of times. And you know what Malambo brings, especially with his fight against Dominic Wooding that he had last in Bellator. But again, some other names that you might want to watch. You might recognize Lukasz Porobiec, among others on this card. Karolina Wojcic. So another one of those Brave cards that, again, it might fly under the radar. This is one of those cards that people aren't going to pay attention to. But I'm going to tell you
for good reason.
I'm going to tell you about a fighter that you should watch. And every now and again, you see these amateurs pop up. And I'll talk about them. And maybe they make some noise. Maybe they don't. The one I will say that I have experience watching in a fight is Tom Pagliarulo. He fought, and I'll pull up his record. He's taking on Brandon Gibbs, who's 4-1. But I can only tell you about Pagliarulo. And you can see him with a smiling Kevin McDonald. So you know there's going to be something good. He beat Zach Richard in a decision to win the promotion's vacant featherweight championship in amateur. Then he beat Jimmy Jackson, who, yeah, he's 4-3. But my point is, Zach Richard is a heck of a fighter. And a doctor stoppage after the first round to get the win. Oh, and by the way, he's a star pupil of Rob Font, who's a really good coach outside of the UFC. You got to expect a Joe Lozon connection there, too. So Tom Pagliarulo, I've seen him training at some of the bigger camps Pagliarulo has in the States before this fight. So just watch out for him, because if he gets another one here, maybe he turns pro, and maybe, you know, you see his name pop up again. Megan Rosado is another one that we've seen on the NEF fight schedule. And again, another win at 135. Maybe she turns pro. Maybe see her pop up again.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Some interesting stuff there. But Matt, the biggest cards over the weekend, you get Cage Warriors 111. You've got Bellator, London. We previewed, we recapped, we spent a lot of time on some of these fights that, listen, it's a throwback to the old podcast. I used to talk about a lot of fights people wouldn't care about, but there were some names on some of those podcasts that would pop up. That's the reason why we do it is, you know, you got to pump the tires of some of these fighters. And then when they pop up, like Macy Barber or
an Edmund Shabazian.
Edmund Shabazian, then you know who they are when they popped up. So it's fun. It's fun as always. You know, it's one of the longer episodes. And listen, there wasn't a whole lot of good fights last weekend. This weekend, there's no UFC. But there's still a lot of about. And there was a lot to talk about as far as social media was concerned with, you know, the Twitter purge, the Ben Askren retirement news.
That was big.
So you're going to want to follow along with that. We really appreciate everybody tuning in. Again, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FMP. You can find Matt at Matt Allen FMP. Don't forget to check out the content on the Loudmouth MMA Podcast Network. There's going to be an episode of Early Stoppage. We're filming it tonight. It should come out either tonight or tomorrow on Thursday. And yeah, you can follow along, like I said, on Twitter. We're going to be tuning into some of these fights over the weekend and offering you a couple different things there. And the other thing I want to pass along, this is the last show in the studio.
It is. We're moving on to bigger and brighter things.
Yeah, I've actually got everything figured out in my head as far as the configuration is concerned. It's going to be tighter quarters, but it's going to be neat and the sound's going to be a lot better as well. So I'm looking forward to that. And our idea is also to pre-record some of our two-minute predictions. So you're going to see a little bit of a different look and feel from Fight Night Picks in the coming weeks, but we have the luxury of a couple of weeks off before UFC Washington, and then 2:45. And we're really looking forward to those. Yeah, so you're not going to want to miss that. We really appreciate everybody tuning into This Week in MMA and look forward to those 2-minute fight predictions coming up here on YouTube. Let's get into it.